Sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Today I'm joined on the show by Dr. Kevin Barrett. Dr. Barrett has a PhD in Arabist Islamology and is one of the best-known critics of the War on Terror. He's a radio talk show host on truthjihadradio.blogspot.com. He's an editor on the website veteranstoday.com. He's the author of several books related to 9/11, and he's appeared on Fox News, CNN, and PBS, and has inspired articles in the New York Times op-ed, Christian Science Monitor, and the Chicago Tribune. Today you'll hear the first part of a two-part interview. The content of these two shows is highly controversial, but protected under the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. The world is currently in such dire straits with such horrible violence in many parts of the globe, and I have to believe that most people on the planet are totally against this, but feel powerless to stop it. Part of gaining our people power back is to develop an understanding of what's really going on in the world, the geopolitics of it all. On today's show, Dr. Kevin Barrett shares his perspective and wealth of knowledge about 9/11 and its connection to the geopolitics of the Middle East. He holds nothing back, so let's begin. Kevin Barrett, welcome to the show.
Hey, it's good to be with you, Cheryl. Thanks.
I understand you're a longtime 9/11 truth activist, and I think you got on board very early on, and I also understand that you lost your job because of your activities around investigating 9/11. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about that?
Sure, yeah. I first figured out how over the top it was, you know, how extremely obvious it was that 9/11 was an inside job in late 2003. I was teaching at the University of Wisconsin at that time, and I heard that Dr. David Ray Griffin was writing a book about 9/11, arguing that the three skyscrapers in New York were blown up. They didn't just fall down due to plane crashes and fires, and that there had been no commercial airline crash at the Pentagon or at Shanksville. In other words, the whole thing was a complete fabrication. And that sounded pretty outrageous to me, but I knew that Dr. Griffin was a very, very careful, methodical and cautious researcher. And so if he was saying that, it needed to be looked at. So I looked at it and discovered that he was right. This was even before his book, The New Pearl Harbor, came out. And I was stunned and spent a few days mulling it over and decided that something needed to be done about this. And it had a lot of potential for being a sort of Archimedes lever to change the world. That, you know, it wasn't just that this was an inside job. I had, from the beginning, I suspected that we weren't getting the full story, but it was such an extreme inside job and so badly executed, and it's so obvious, and the evidence is so clear and simple and straightforward that this could be used to change the world. So I started doing teach-ins at the University of Wisconsin and stayed there. I graduated. I got my PhD in 2005, I think, and I was teaching there. I'd been teaching from 1994 onward, and then I finished my PhD and stayed on and kept teaching. And then in spring 2006, I was ambushed by a right-wing, a neocon radio talk show host who's married to a Republican Party bigwig. She called me up and said, yeah, I'd like to talk to you about your 9/11 work and the class you're going to be teaching in the fall at the University of Wisconsin on Islam. I said, sure. So that evening, we did a radio interview, and she introduced me as Wisconsin's Ward Churchill, an evil man who's corrupting our nation's youth, and kind of went on from there. So next morning, state legislator Steve Ness put out a fatwa saying I needed to be fired from the University of Wisconsin because of the views I had expressed on the radio. And it turned into a big kind of international news story. And so from then on, I was all over the mainstream media, and the university was not able to fire me during that semester, because my teaching was totally defensible. But they did refuse to rehire me after that. So since then, I've been working in alternative media.
I agree with you. There's so much evidence that 9/11 was a false flag, an inside job with, and an outside job, that it's so obvious if people just take the time to look. So maybe you could talk a little bit about the connections to the Saudis and 9/11, and then we'll talk about the connection to the Israelis and 9/11. But let's start with the Saudis.
Well, many Americans don't realize that Saudi Arabia is essentially a U.S.-Israeli puppet state. That is, it's run by the U.S., and the U.S. is run by Israel. So the Saudis don't really have any power on their own. Ever since Ibn Saud made a deal with Franklin D. Roosevelt in 1945, signing over the kingdom's right to determine its oil sales to the U.S., so the U.S. basically assumed full control over Saudi oil policy, oil pricing, and oil sales, it's been an appendage of the U.S. empire. So with regard to 9/11, shortly before 9/11, the Saudi leadership had announced that there was going to be a parting of the ways, that Saudi Arabia was going to have to leave the U.S. imperial orbit. And the main reason for this is that the Saudi people, like all the people in the Middle East, are so angry at the United States for its support of Israel, which they regard as a genocidal, illegitimate entity with some justification. So Saudi Arabia was about to break off its relations with the U.S., which would be catastrophic because the U.S. controls the world's oil through Saudi Arabia, the swing producer. And then, conveniently enough, 9/11 happened, and the U.S. at that point could threaten any recalcitrant Saudis and say, you're not leaving our empire or we're going to nuke Mecca. And that threat probably was made. We know that the same threat was made to Pakistan, that Bush told Musharraf, who was president of Pakistan, that you're going to do what we say or we're going to bomb Pakistan back to the Stone Age. It's a direct quote from Musharraf talking about what Bush told him. So undoubtedly Bush made the same threat to the Saudis. It basically got rid of the anti-empire Saudis and reinforce the power of the U.S. puppet Saudis. Now, I believe that Saudi assets were used on 9/11 by the perpetrators. The Saudi intelligence agency is essentially an appendage of the CIA. The Saudi military and intelligence agencies could not exist without the American money, support, training, and infiltration. Essentially, they're part of U.S. intelligence. And so the U.S. had its Saudi assets come to the United States and pose as supposed hijackers. These people were given CIA snitch visas to enter the United States. That is, 15 of the 19 hijackers are Saudis, or the alleged hijackers, I should say, because there weren't really any hijackings. But 15 of the patsies were Saudis, and they came to the United States on CIA snitch visas. The CIA gives people rewards for spying on their own countrymen in the form of these special visas and trips to the United States. So that's how 15 of these patsies were brought over, was on CIA special visas. And so these 15 guys were, of course, tied in with the Saudi power structure, which is essentially run by the U.S. And they pretended to learn to fly at flight schools and basically posed as future hijackers, but they didn't do it very well. They were supposed to be pretending to be radical Muslims, but in fact these guys were running around partying like crazy, dating strippers. Muhammad Atta's girlfriend was a stripper, and she said his favorite food was pork chops. And she also said he spoke fluent Hebrew, which suggests that there may have been a replacement. The original Atta may have been killed and replaced by a Mossad double. So in any case, there's this very extreme sort of tie-in there between the Saudi patsies and the people who did 9/11, who were essentially Zionists and primarily American Zionists with support from Israel.
I just want to back up a minute. You said that there were no hijackers on the planes. Maybe you could talk about the evidence about that.
We know that there were no hijackers on the planes because had those guys actually been on the planes, we would have seen the evidence that they were on the planes. That is, the government would have produced the ticket stubs, the authenticated passenger lists, the security footage from the airports where they supposedly boarded these planes, and testimony from the airline employees who would have ticketed and boarded these people. Not one shred of any such evidence has ever existed. Nobody has ever testified that they ticketed and boarded these people. There would have been vast amounts of CCTV security video footage of these guys at the airports where they boarded the attack planes, but there's not one shred of authenticated footage that's ever been seen. There was some blatantly fake footage from Dulles Airport that purported to show those hijackers, but it had the wrong people. That wasn't even the guys that they said were among the 19 hijackers. there are a couple of wrong identifications, wrong time of day, the shadows were wrong, and no authentication stamp, moving camera, it was not a security camera. So somebody created a forgery, a fake video, supposedly a security video from Dulles Airport, and then there's no other security footage whatsoever of any of these guys getting on the planes. So we also know that the DNA identified all of the supposed passenger victims on 9/11, but they didn't DNA identify a single alleged Arab hijacker. The families of these alleged hijackers begged the U.S. government to take samples from them and to try to see whether their loved ones had actually been among the people that died in these crashes. The U.S. government refused. So for all of these reasons, as well as the fact that 10 of the 19 alleged hijackers showed up alive after 9/11, and one of them had been dead before 9/11, we know that there were no actual hijackers or hijackings that day.
Okay, that's a great explanation of that. Thanks. You had mentioned earlier that the Israelis run America, and maybe you could talk about that.
No, not all of America. They run American Middle East policy. And I shouldn't even say run. I should just say dominate. They're by far the strongest player. Everybody is pursuing their own interests in America. It's a big casino, you know, where the banana interests run U.S. Central America policy, and the trade with China interests run China policy, and the military-industrial interests run a lot of our military policy. Well, as far as Mideast policy goes, that's totally dominated by the Israelis. In fact, kind of the right-wing extremist Israelis. And they exert their power through a lot of ways. They essentially own Congress. Half of the money given to federal candidates in the U.S. comes from wealthy Zionist Jews. The mainstream media in the U.S. is dominated by Jewish Zionists, as Philip Weiss, the former mainstream New York Times reporter, has discussed in a wonderful piece he wrote called Do We Jews Dominate the Media and So What If We Do? He describes his life in journalism, the fact that the majority of his colleagues and bosses and all of the important players up to the owners of the mainstream media are Jewish Zionists, and he says that they are protecting Israel. They're reporting the way they report primarily in order to protect Israel. They are afraid that Israel could go down, and for them that would be like another Holocaust. So through their control of the media and their control of politics, and we should say a certain presence in the financial world where perhaps a quarter to a third of America's richest billionaires are Jewish Zionists and they all work together, and then the world's richest banking family, the Rothschilds, and their friends are also, well, the Rothschilds, of course, are the founding family of Israel. So there is this immense Zionist power that has captured U.S. Middle East policy, and 9/11 was, I believe, a coup d'etat by a hardline element of American Zionists backed by Israel to change U.S. policy towards the Middle East, to take the U.S. from being just kind of liberal pro-Israel, as it had been before, to completely marching in lockstep with the most extreme hardline Zionists around people like Ariel Sharon and Benjamin Netanyahu, to just over-the-top war criminals, Nazi-style war criminals, who nobody believed, but back in the 1980s, 1990s, nobody ever would have believed that someone like Sharon or Netanyahu could possibly get to the top position in Israel. They were considered to be, you know, Hitlers, basically. But now we have this extremist wing has taken over Israel, and they also took over America by blowing up the World Trade Center and murdering 3,000 Americans in order to murder another million-plus people around the world and destroy the Constitution and bankrupt this country through the trillions of dollars that have been spent on these post-9/11 wars for Israel.
Now, there would have to be some elements of the U.S. government working with them in order for 9/11 to have happened. Would you agree? And if so, who do you see as the...
The U.S. government was the prime player in both enabling the attack on the Pentagon and in covering up the demolition of the buildings in New York. And who are the people in the government that did it? Well, look no further than PNAC, Project for a New American Century. This is an organization that was founded by the same people who wrote a think tank strategy piece for Netanyahu in 1996. That was called Securing the Realm, I think it was, the Clean Break document, which said that we needed to totally destroy the Middle East in order to save it for Israel, basically. Redraw everything, totally overturn the Middle East so Israel can transcend its enemies, not just defeat them, but transcend them. So those same guys, and they're Americans, but they're almost all Jewish, and they're extreme hardcore Zionists, Wolfowitz, Pearl, basically the usual suspects that ended up in Dick Cheney's office and in the civilian wing of the Pentagon in order to carry out 9/11. Those are the people who then started an organization called PNAC, Project for a New American Century, fronted by a few non-Jewish Zionists such as George Bush, Donald Rumsfeld, and Dick Cheney. But almost all the rest of them were Jewish Zionists. And PNAC, Project for a New American Century, called for a new Pearl Harbor, that is, a massive attack on America, killing a few thousand people and enraging the population into going to war. They actually called for this in a document called Rebuilding America's Defenses that they put out in September of 2000, exactly 1 year before 9/11. So, yes, U.S. government people did this, but it was U.S. government people whose first allegiance is to Israel.
Where does the evidence point as to how Israel pulled this off?
Well, besides all of this background that I'm explaining to you about the domination of U.S. Middle East policy by the Zionists, the coming to power of the Project for a New American Century people, who became Bush's main brain trust when Bush took power after vote fraud and stealing the presidency from Al Gore, looking at a more empirical and detailed aspect of the evidence, we have all kinds of evidence tying Israel to 9/11. The most obvious is the Israelis who were arrested after participating in the 9/11 attacks in New York. There were a number of Israelis who were arrested. They were set up before the attacks, and then they were arrested after cheering and celebrating the attacks. They had thousands and thousands of dollars stuffed in their socks. They worked for a Mossad moving company, posed as a moving van company, but they were actually Mossad agents. They were held for a couple of months in the U.S., and then Chertoff, who was an Israeli dual citizen, sent them back to Israel. They failed lie detector tests in the meantime. But it turns out it wasn't just those guys. There were other Israelis who were arrested on 9/11 with truckloads full of explosives trying to blow up New York's bridges and tunnels. And you can find some of this stuff at Veterans Today, where we've posted actual footage of, actually audio tapes of the police calling in the arrest of these Israelis who had a truckload of explosives, which actually exploded. They were apparently, the New York police went into action on 9/11. Other evidence includes evidence of foreknowledge. There's massive evidence of Israeli foreknowledge of 9/11, including the fact that Odigo Instant Messaging Systems, which is an Israeli company, sent out a message in Hebrew, apparently selected for Israeli, because they have a feature that you can select nationality, warning people to stay away from the World Trade Center. This went out about 7 in the morning on September 11, 2001, and it may be one reason that so few Israelis were killed. Israel was expecting to lose as many as 4,000 people in the attacks, and as it turned out, there was one Israeli on one of the planes, and there's somewhere between 0 and 4 died in the Twin Towers. It seems as though an effort was made to find some victims so that they could say that at least one or a couple of Israelis died. But not only did Odigo Instant Messaging Systems warn everybody who spoke Hebrew to stay away from the Twin Towers that morning, Zim Shipping, which is a huge shipping company that's half owned by the Israeli government, broke its year-long lease and lost a huge sum of money by moving out of the Twin Towers just a few days before 9/11. Other Israeli companies are said also to have moved out of the towers. One of the reasons why, instead of the many, many people they expected to lose, they lost at most just 3 or 4. Other evidence of Israeli involvement concerns the Israeli spies who were keeping tabs on the Patsies, who were set up to be the alleged hijackers. There was a huge Israeli spy ring that was busted during and after 9/11. Hundreds of Israelis were arrested as part of a huge operation that involved breaking into DEA offices, breaking into other government offices. It seems that what happened was there were hundreds of these Israeli agents swarming the U.S. during the run-up to 9/11, and most of them were just distractions. So they were running around calling attention to themselves, posing as art students, and then going and breaking into government offices and stuff, getting themselves arrested, being very brazen in their approaches to U.S. government people. And then the real work was being done by the demolition specialists working on the World Trade Center and the communications specialists, the Amdocs people. Amdocs is the company that controls all U.S. telephone records and internet records, and it's an Israeli company. And so they were using their influence or their ability to get into the U.S. communication system to set things up for 9/11. And then finally, there were whole squads of Israeli spies shadowing the Patsy hijackers. They were living right across the street from Mohammed Atta in Florida and other of the people who were being set up to be the hijacking Patsies. And this was exposed in mainstream sources after 9/11. Christopher Ketchum, who's a mainstream investigative journalist, published a piece at Salon.com, which has since been, I believe, taken down. And you can get a copy of it, but it's not the original. They've disappeared the original copy. And that article went into great detail about this Israeli spy ring. It was also reported by Justin Raimondo at Antiwar.com. He published a book about it called The Terror Enigma. And it's also been in other mainstream forces, believe it or not, including Fox News. In January of 2002, Carl Cameron of Fox News did a three-part series about this Israeli spy scandal. Now, he didn't quite go all the way, and he stopped short of showing the evidence that the Israelis actually did 9/11, but he came pretty close. He was taking the angle that they had foreknowledge and that they didn't warn us. So that's some of the evidence. One other interesting piece of evidence is that Susan Lindauer, a CIA asset who had foreknowledge of 9/11 through her CIA controller, was told on 9/11 by her CIA controller that the Israelis did it. They were both watching the Twin Towers being destroyed, and they were talking on the telephone as the Twin Towers were being blown up. And Susan Lindauer's CIA controller started screaming about the goddamned Israelis. So this is just some. I could go on like this for quite a while. And I guess one more thing I should mention is the ownership of the World Trade Center. The World Trade Center was taken over by the Zionists just 2 months before 9/11. The privatization of the Trade Center, which had been run by New York's Port Authority, was set up by a bunch of billionaire Zionists, including Frank Lowy, the billionaire shopping magnate who was actually a member of the Israeli terrorist gang Haganah that created Israel, Larry Silverstein, a well-known Zionist organized crime figure who was the front man for purchasing the Trade Center from New York and doubling the insurance so he could get rich when they blew it up, and the other guy's name. There's a third Zionist, another billionaire Jewish Zionist, who was number one Republican Party financier in the country, who was the head of the Lewis Eisenberg. He engineered the sale of the Trade Center to Larry Silverstein just 2 months before 9/11. As I said, Silverstein, and these guys are all close friends of Netanyahu. Silverstein talks to Netanyahu every week on the phone, every Sunday, according to Haaretz, the Israeli newspaper. Silverstein buys the Trade Center, doubles the insurance, and then suddenly just doesn't show up for breakfast that morning, and neither does his family. They all survive, and everybody who was eating in the windows of the world is killed. And then Silverstein collects double indemnity on the already doubled insurance. He said there were two separate terrorist attacks, the two planes. So this crime syndicate involving Larry Silverstein, Lewis Eisenberg, Frank Lowy, and other billionaire Zionist Jewish mafiosi people, the people who really run New York from behind the scenes, these people privatized the World Trade Center just 2 months before 9/11 in order to demolish it. You know, as I said, the city of New York has been desperate to take down the Trade Center for a decade. It's largely empty, hemorrhaging money for the Port Authority, antiquated communications equipment, and under court order to scrape off all of the asbestos from the frame members. This would have cost double-digit billions, vastly more than these white elephant buildings were worth. The only question was, how are you going to demolish them when they're full of asbestos? So Silverstein and his friends came up with an alternative plan to do an illegal demolition and make a lot of money at it and gain a lot for Israel in the process by making it part of a sort of a Zionist coup d'etat to take over the U.S. government. And so they rigged it up for a demolition, and on 9/11 they set up the fake plane hijackings and so on as a cover story so they could blow up these buildings. And they collected four times the original insurance. Larry doubled the insurance when he bought the buildings, then he doubled it again with his double indemnity claim, which was granted. The court actually ruled that he could take twice as much money because there were two completely separate and unrelated terrorist attacks. You can't make this stuff up. Then why was it covered up so well? Well, number one, as I said, the Zionists totally dominate the U.S. media, and they're totally paranoid about anything that could possibly incriminate Israel. So obviously, they are going to stay away from this. Elements of the U.S. government were complicit, and you know, the people at the high levels of the U.S. government, I believe, may have been convinced that something like this would be good for America. You know, Pinak had been writing that a new Pearl Harbor would be the best thing that could happen to America because it would unite Americans in going out and pursuing this aggressive foreign policy. And so some American policymakers who are in love with the idea of a perpetual U.S. empire may have been convinced by the Zionists that this was actually in American interest. So Cheney, Rumsfeld, Bush, that, you know, that top level of the executive branch was very much on board with 9/11. And once it's been done, then everybody's going to cover it up, because imagine the chaos that would ensue if this ever got out. It really threatens social stability. It threatens the very foundations of the society. And so even the people who were not involved in it are going to cover it up. And many of them will do it unconsciously. They'll just know that if this were true, it would be so horrifying and so destabilizing to the country that it's not even worth considering the possibility that it's true. So they covered it up in those ways. And then, of course, a lot of people were killed, just like after the JFK assassination. So we're living in a really Orwellian world now. Our Constitution has been badly damaged, if not completely shredded. Our budget has been totally ruined. We've spent trillions on these wars for Israel based on the 9/11 myth. And here we are, you know, on the road to ruin. And the only question is whether enough Americans will wake up in time to turn it around.
Do you see that happening?
Well, more and more people are mistrusting authority and mistrusting official stories, including 9/11. I think a lot of people feel kind of disempowered, though, you know, and that's, it was designed to make people feel that way. It was a shock and awe operation. The purpose of a shock and awe operation is to say, you puny little people, you can't do anything about us. We've got the firepower, we've got the megatons, we can blow up these buildings and we can do anything we want. So people don't want to know that, so they stick with the official story. And then the people who do start to figure it out feel disempowered. Wow, if those guys have that much power, we better not mess with them. But that's what it was designed to do. And actually, they wouldn't do something this outrageous and this desperate unless they were in desperate straits. And they are. You know, the Zionists are in absolutely desperate straits. They've been murdering and ethnic cleansing their way to oblivion for six decades, and they don't have a future in occupied Palestine. The entire region is united, at least at the level of popular sentiment, that Israel, this Jewish supremacist genocidal state, is not a legitimate state. It's got to go. Essentially, everyone in the region agrees. Governments don't say that because the governments are controlled by the U.S. and indirectly by the Zionists. So Israel's in extremely desperate straits. That's why they had to do this. The U.S. empire is in rather desperate straits as well, partly thanks to the trillions that it spent on these wars for Israel. The U.S. empire is now facing the fact that China is rising, Russia is reasserting itself, the BRIC countries are where the economic action is, the West is stagnant, the U.S. is permanently stagnant. So I think that 9/11 really represents the utter desperation of the Zionists and the U.S. empire people.
You've just been listening to an interview with Dr. Kevin Barrett. To learn more about him and to listen to his radio shows, the website is truthjihadradio.blogspot.com. You can also read his articles at the website veteranstoday.com. Tune in next week to hear the rest of this provocative interview. In the 6.5 years that I've been doing phone interviews, I've never had any technical interference. But while conducting this interview, the phone lines became disconnected twice. Not sure what that means, but just thought I'd mention it. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.